the show that's focused on investing strategies for today's needs and tomorrow's goals. This is Bucket Strategy Investing, presented by the Wealth Advisors at Lucia Capital Group. Now, here are Johnny Dean and Rick the Professor Plum.
And welcome to the program. You are tuned in to the Bucket Strategy Investing Show. Another hour stands right here before us as we get ready to give you more of the best in money information. Professor Rick Plum joins me. I'm Johnny Dean. We're here as always from Lucia Capital Group. And naturally, yes, we got a whole lot of things to talk about this hour. Your chance to call in with your money questions happens to be right now. There are several lines. In fact, all the lines happen to be open for once, and the Brain Trust is standing by for you. Give us a call right now, 877-PLANNER. You got a money or strategy question. You want to discuss what your options might be at retirement. We've had a couple of calls like that already today. You grab your phone and you call us at that number, 877-PLANNER, which is 877-752-6637. You can also email us your questions, your comments, whatever it is, at our website, wealthed.com. Click on the Find Your Answer link, you type your question in, and you send it to us, because this is what we do on this program. We answer your questions. Wealth education, that's what we try to provide to you every day. I do think we succeed quite well. You can also contact the Brain Trust off the air at Lucia Capital Group at their off-air number, 800-644-1150. You have the opportunity to meet with a Brain Trust advisor. You can go over your individual situation. I would suggest that you know what your options are. You want to trust the Brain Trust network of advisors available to you through a single point of contact, meaning just the one advisor. They have access to the entire network. You call Professor Plum, any of the advisors at Lucia Capital Group, 800-644-1150. Again, that's the off-air number, 800-644-1150. On the air, 877-PLANNER, P-L-A-N-N-E-R. 877-752-6637. I said plenty of lines open right now. So we were talking last hour about the 4% rule. Not really a rule. It's more of a guideline. One last thing on this, if I can just throw this in. A lot of times, when you talk about taking 4% out of your portfolio, Professor Plum, I mean, you don't know how long you're going to live. You could have 30 years. You could have more. You could have less. More often than not, that either leave too much money. I mean, you could have spent in the portfolio, or you find out that for whatever reason it wound up being too much because your sequence of returns was wrong.
Well, the idea of sequence of returns, there are ways to potentially protect against that. That's where the bucket strategy really comes in handy. Doesn't guarantee it, but it does help it a lot when you have a negative sequence of returns. But no matter what happens, we don't know when we're going to die. I hope we don't know when we're going to die. And so if you tell me when you're going to die, we can create a great strategy to run out of money by the time you die.
The very day, if you can get it that exact.
Oh, yeah, we can get kind of crazy with that. But even at that, though, it's going to be some adjustment over time, because the markets are not going to do exactly what we assume they're going to do today. So there's always going to be some form of adjustment. So by the very nature of the inexactness, the inexact science that is financial planning, there will either be more or less money left over when you die than originally anticipated. And even if we could make assumptions that were correct, and we could track the money exactly, you're going to spend it differently 5 years from now, 10 years from now,
exactly,
than you thought you were going to when you first got to retirement. Things change, and your portfolio has to change with it. Your needs, your wants, your goals, and the market. All of these things have to be anticipated to some degree, but changed, and we have to make small or maybe large adjustments to continue with what you're trying to accomplish.
Yeah, you have to do that, and you do that even with a bucket strategy.
You have to.
I mean, along the way. It's not like you can just set this up when you're age 60 and then just...
I have not met anybody yet who said, a year before retirement, I need $5,000, whatever, pick a number for retirement, and that was the exact number they needed for retirement. It was either going to be a little more or a little less, and over time, it changed. It always does. In fact, before retirement and moving into it, I was talking to somebody last night about this, about the fact that that movement is a transition period, and it's not exactly known what retirement is going to actually feel or look like, especially from a financial standpoint, because you haven't been there yet. You have an idea, and so that's one of the things we want to do before we get to retirement, as we're getting close to that date. Try to look at ourselves. What does retirement look like, and what is it going to cost? But going from... And it's a different feel, too, where we're working. We're getting a paycheck every month. We have a certain comfort in that. And then there's a certain, uncomfortable feeling when we go from getting a paycheck every month to relying on our portfolio? Even though in our minds, we know we have enough money there to provide our needs. We've been told because the plan says we have enough money to do it. Those first several months, even up to a couple of years, can be an anxious time getting used to taking money from a portfolio. Of all our lives we've been saving, all our lives we've been in a growth mode, and now we're transitioning. It's a weird feeling.
Exactly, because you've been filling the pool all this time. Now you're draining it. I mean, really? I mean, there are times when it can get partially refilled, but even so, just taking those you know, buckets of water out.
I prefer to drain it by doing cannonballs into it. Just jump in and let the splash happen.
Well, I think that's just physics. You know, when Rick jumps in, the water
jumps out. Disappears.
Yeah, there you go. Okay, it can be psychologically difficult for some people. Now,
way to help alleviate some of that is to have a strategy that actually works with you, rather than just some haphazard, let's deal with, you know, the rule of thumb that everybody else in the world thinks is appropriate, but is not necessarily appropriate for you. 4%. 4% of what? So no matter what happens, whether I retire at 60, like one of our callers in the last hour talked about doing, I need to take 4% of my portfolio and never change it, even though my Social Security is going to start somewhere between 2 and 10 years later. Mm-hmm. And I might not need as much for my portfolio. Or maybe I need more for my portfolio now. I've seen individuals take 8% for a little while because they're waiting to take their Social Security. And then when their Social Security kicks in, even though they've drawn their portfolio down a little bit, now they only need like 1% or 2%, 3% for the portfolio going forward. So creating that strategy for you. And we talked about it before also. What is the biggest killer for a pro rata distribution of just a 4%, 5%, 3%?
You mean taking 4 or 5% out and then just rebalancing the rest?
Just rebalancing?
Yeah.
The biggest killer is a negative sequence of returns over the next 5, 6 years, 4 years, 3 years. It's not just the downside that's the problem. It's the time horizon that it takes to recover from that downside as well. It may only drop for a year, but it may not recover for 6, 7, 8 years. Or it may drop for 3 years like it did in 2000. And then as it's recovering, it drops again in 2008. So it may take 10 years mm-hmm. to recover. So you need to have some area of capital to draw down so you're not, the biggest thing that hurts a retirement portfolio is spending an asset when it's down in value.
You can come back.
That's the killer.
That's it. You can come back to the pool of water analogy. Okay, you're taking a certain amount out and everything seems okay, but then all of a sudden Professor Plum jumps in, right?
Thank you.
Well, you weren't expecting that. Well, all of a sudden the pool that you had that was filled to, you know, the 6 foot line is now down to the 5 foot line.
Thank you.
And you're still taking.
That was a big cannonball.
Well, you brought it up.
And I splashed it out.
That's right. You see, this is for illustrative purposes only. So yes, psychologically it could be very difficult. Now, you had said last hour that I had asked the question sort of rhetorically that somebody might balk at the thought that, do you really need 15 years worth of safety? I mean, think about it. I need the market needs 15 years to do what it's going to do. So do I really have to take, let's say, a $600,000 portfolio, whatever, and I need $25,000 a year? Are you telling me that I need to take
$375,000.
Thank you. $375,000 of my $600,000 and just, I mean, what if I could lock it away in CDs for 15 years and just withdraw $25,000 every year? I'm guaranteed an income.
Well, you're guaranteed a distribution.
I mean, well, a $25,000 distribution. That's my income.
Right. That's what you're going to spend every year. Now,
is that a good idea?
Well, how much money do you have to start with?
Well, let's call it 600 grand. I just picked a number out of the air.
If you wanted to be ultra conservative, and we're not going to really take much into inflation into account in this, sure, put $375,000 in your mattress. And every year, take $25,000 out of it and spend it. But now you have $600,000 to start with. You put $375,000 over, this is what you have, $225,000 left over?
I'm going to leave it in CDs. Let's put it as that. Okay. A mattress, I don't think anybody would recommend that.
Well, I'm going. You know,
I got it. Okay.
So, but you have $225,000 in your portfolio left over, right?
Right.
So you take that you locked away $375,000 into an account or something.
It's buried underground in my backyard.
Yeah.
In a weatherproof container.
And nobody can get to it
right,
besides
except
you.
Except me, right.
Biometrics and all that. You know,
okay, so I take $25,000 out of that. I've got another.
You know it's going to last 15 years.
Right.
So you take the other $225,000 and you set it off to the side and you don't look at it.
Where do you put it?
Well, that's up to you. What do you think you can get on a 15-year CD?
I have no idea.
4% maybe?
All right, I guess. Sure, why not? You think just, 15 I'm, years?
I think you...
Maybe some kind of an annuity. I don't know.
Maybe, yeah.
But I could earn 4%
over 15 years.
Yeah, okay.
So 15 years goes by.
I'm out. My cash is gone
You
now.
Pulled your last $25,000 out of your cash.
My
cash.
Capsule under my ground, underground, yeah.
And now you look over to that that 15-year CD and you say, what do I have left? Well, what do you have left is about a little over $600,000.
So my $225,000 over that 15 years grew to $600,000.
Yeah.
And that's getting 4% per year.
Now I got it. Now I just redo it again for another. But I need some. But this is that's overly simplistic.
You and that is that ultra way. Conservative. Which
that's earning nothing for 15 years on the first account. Just because we want a 15-year period of time to force an entire stock portfolio doesn't mean that we can't have things in the middle that have a little volatility. We just don't want the entire volatility of the market.
That's it. Exactly. Great, great stuff. All right, 877-PLANNER, room on the phones. We will talk to you on the phone when we come back. Emails as well. Johnny Dean, Professor Rick Plum, we're coming right back. Bucket Strategy Investing, Johnny Dean, Professor Rick Plum. We are taking your phone calls. We'll get some emails shortly. If you want to email us, it's at wealthed.com, our website, wealthed.com, at the Find Your Answer link. We'll tell you in a little while where you can meet the Brain Trust. That's coming up. You can meet them in person at a couple of different locations. If you want to know right now, you can go to our website, wealthed.com, and find out at the Live Events tab. All right, let's move along back to, let's see, let's go to Dave next. In Dallas, Texas. Hi, Dave.
Hey, how you doing?
Good. How are you doing today?
I got a general, very general question about rollover versus RMD and paying the tax on the rollover and waiting and or not waiting, but paying the tax on a rollover.
Well,
versus,
Dave, when you talk about David, when you talk about a rollover. What are you rolling over from where to where?
Okay, this is a 403.
Okay.
And we have roughly 650K.
Okay.
And it's presently, in quotes, guaranteed about 3.5% on that 650K.
Okay, so you've got it in fixed annuities inside your 403B. Okay, that's nice.
And then if I roll it over, I roll it over into a 1% account.
Okay, you're rolling it over to what, though? What is the titling of the account? Is it still a 403B?
It would be, it'd be a IRA.
Okay, if you're rolling it over to a traditional IRA, that is a non-taxable event.
Oh, okay.
And why would you roll over a 3.5% guarantee to a 1% guarantee?
Yeah, that's... Okay, then you got some very good questions. That's the gist of my question. That was the reason I was calling.
I was going to say that's probably why you were calling, right? Because
my main point, I guess, is all right. Pushing it over. Okay, let me rephrase it.
Okay.
If I wanted to roll it over into a Roth.
Okay, that's taxable.
That's the taxable event, and that's where I'm forced into a minimum of a 1% account.
Well, so you're not forced into a minimum 1% account. You can roll it to a Roth IRA and invest it any way you want that's available today. You can invest it into fixed accounts, guaranteed accounts, or you could go stocks, bonds, ETFs, whatever you want. And the Roth is an account, not an investment. So if you move money from the 403B account, which happens to be invested in a 3.5% fixed annuity, over to a Roth IRA account, that's a taxable event on however much money you move from point A to point B. And now you can invest it any way you want with stocks, bonds, mutual funds, fixed annuities, index annuities, whatever the case may be. You've got a very wide assortment of investments available inside the Roth IRA.
But part of my concern is I have this nervousness about losing that.
Okay, so why do you want 2%? To roll it over?
Well, I've been listening to you guys and reading your stuff for quite a while, with the idea of avoiding future tax rates.
Okay. Are you retired right now, Dave?
I would just leave it.
Okay. Are you retired right now?
Say again, please.
Are you retired?
No.
Okay.
I am not.
Are you married or single?
I'm married.
How much household income do you have right now, total household income?
I have 90K.
Okay, so
I'll have 90K for the next 3 years.
So you're towards the top of the 15% income tax bracket. 4 years from now, when you're no longer making $90,000, are you retiring in 4 years? How much income will you have then?
Approximately 50.
So you're going to drop significantly on the income tax. So I wouldn't necessarily look at doing the rollover today. Now, that $50,000 when you retire, is that coming from pensions or from Social Security? Combination of the two.
It's just pension.
And will you get Social
Security? I'd like to wait on Social Security until I'm 70.
So what I would look at doing is when you retire in 4 years, will you need more than $50,000 to live off of for a while?
Not normally, no.
Okay. When you retire, then start doing Roth conversions. Now, we're going to call them conversions because we're converting a tax-deferred account into a potentially tax-free account. You would do a Roth conversion, but you have a lot more room to do conversions 3 years from now with a total of $50,000 worth of income than you do with $90,000. Right now, you could maybe do $5,000 of conversions depending upon what your deductions are and stay in the 15% bracket. 3 years from now, you'll be able to do $50,000, $45,000 worth of conversions and stay in the 15% tax bracket. And I would continue to do that, depending upon what else is going on, at least until my Social Security kicks in. But for right now, if you're very anxious about the investments, if you don't like risk, I'm not sure I'd want to take it out of that 3.5% account.
Even when my income drops, is that what you're saying?
Now, when the income drops, I may do it for different reasons. I would do it to take advantage of the lower 15% bracket, but I would look for something, hopefully interest rates have gone back up a little bit in the next 3-4 years, but I would look at what the interest rates or what investments I could use at that point that can get me close to, if not better than a 3.5% rate of return. And now I don't have to worry about the RMD on that portion of it. And there's a lot of things that would work in your favor going forward, but I don't see the reason to push me into that conversion area today.
Okay. What if today was the year I retired, I'm just trying to push you forward.
I understand, and so, I would.
Or hypothetically, let's say in 3 years or 4 years, interest rates are still miserable.
Then my first indication though is, first off, the money that we're going to be converting, the $50,000 a year or so, give or take, is money I'm not going to spend for 15 years or 20 years. And so I can put it into assets that maybe has a little bit of volatility, not much, but does potentially, it either has some liquidity risk or something else, but I'm going to basically leave it alone for a long period of time. And in that money, I think I can do better than 3.5%. I think I can do better than 3.5%. The question for you is, will you be anxious about it? Will you lose sleep over it? And if you do lose sleep over it because of what you're using, then it's not to be done. You don't want to ever put yourself in a situation where you're going from a very nice guarantee, even though there are some other benefits, tax-free growth and things of that nature with the Roth IRA, if you are anxious about the investment you're putting it into. But I think that over the time horizon that you're going to be investing, you can do better than the 3.5%.
Gotcha. Hey, I wanted to hear some of this from. I just wanted to bounce some ideas off some other guys. I appreciate it.
Well, Dave, it's always a good idea to do so, and I'm glad you called. If you want to hang on to get some more information, you certainly can do that as well. If you want to talk a little bit more in depth with Professor Plum, you're welcome to do that. Always good to do that, Professor Plum. I mean, sometimes you think this doesn't seem right, or
and he's a very nerdy. Cautious investor.
Sure.
And he's got a very nice guarantee.
It is a very nice guarantee. I mean, at least given today's world.
In today's world, yes.
10 years ago, you might have had a different answer.
3.5?
3.5.
Sweet.
Sure, absolutely. Dave, thank you for the call. Wonderful. Great question. All right, 877-PLANNER. We do have some room on the phones. Looks like three lines open now. Grab them while you can. Professor Plum is here. I'm Johnny Dean from Lucia Capital Group, answering your money questions. The Brain Trust, standing by, 877-PLA-NER. We're coming right back. Market Strategy Investing, Johnny Dean, Professor Rick Plum. 877-PLANNER, our number. We do have a little bit of room on the phones right now, so if you want to join the Brain Trust and talk about your money, run something by us, kind of like our last caller, Dave in Dallas, who had an idea or whatever, maybe was pitched something, I'm not quite sure. You run it by the Brain Trust, and we'll give you our opinion, and then it's entirely up to you how you want to proceed from there. If you want to learn more about some of the stuff that we talk about on this show, which has to do with retirement income strategies, but also whatever's on your mind, you can meet the Brain Trust in person at one of the Lucia Capital Group Retirement Income Strategies workshops. It's the spring series. It's still going on. You can the next one, in fact, is coming up on Saturday, April 9th. That's just like, 10 days away from now. Saturday, April 9th in Houston, Texas. If you're listening in Houston, watching in Houston, join the Brain Trust that day, Saturday morning, 9 o'clock local time start in Houston, Texas. So that'll be that. You can go to wealthed.com. That's where you sign up. It's all free. Just tell us you're going to be there. Tell us how many folks and we'll set up enough chairs. So Houston, a week from Saturday, then April 30th, Santa Clara, California. Yeah, it's about a month away, but mark it down. We'll tell you more about it as we get closer. So Houston and Santa Clara, those are the next two. Working on a couple of deals for May as well. If we can work those out, we'll tell you where and when that's going to happen. But you can always check our website, wealthed.com, for updates, wealthed.com. All free, as I said. Okay, 877-PLANNER, our number, PLANNER. One leftover question from our discussion yesterday, and it was this: how much of my portfolio should be in stocks when I retire? Stocks.
That is now, so simple. I mean, you start with 100 and you subtract your age from 100.
Oh.
And the resulting number is how much you should have in
stocks.
Okay,
right. So.
Bull!
Say that again. Say that again for the.
Bull?
Well, the way you said it, I was.
It's bull. There's no reason to use it, but it's a very popular issue. And a lot of people think, well, I'm 65, I should have 35% in stocks. And as I get older, I should have less and less in stocks. No, actually. As you get older and you progress through retirement, you can actually have a higher from a financial standpoint, you can have a higher percentage of your assets in stocks. Now, the lowest percentage of assets you should have in stocks is the day you retire. That's because you want to minimize the risk, because at that point you still have potentially a long time horizon to draw money. When you're 95 years old, you don't have as long of a time horizon to draw money. So some of the money you're not going to spend once you get out to that age. It can be more invested in stocks. But the idea of how much money you should have in stocks, that is very dependent on who you are and what you have in your financial life already set up, pensions, the amount of Social Security, how much money you need, and how much money you have. There are extreme examples. I mean, we see people who have lots of pensions. I met a gentleman that has $10,000 a month of pensions. He's 60 years old. He spends $6,000 a month. And he's got this extra, but he's also saved money through the years. He's got about $500,000 in his portfolio. He can have any amount of money in stocks that he wants, really. And he can also have none of it in stocks if he doesn't want to. If he's a super conservative, because that portfolio really isn't going to make a difference in his life. It'll help his kids, but he's got more money from pensions than he thinks he'll ever need to spend, even with inflation. Now, on the other side, we meet people that have $1,500 a month in Social Security, and they need $5,000, $6,000, $7,000 a month in spending money through retirement. And they've got like $200,000 or $300,000. How are they going to create a portfolio to provide them $36,000, $45,000 a year out of a $200,000, $300,000? That's a different game. And unfortunately, they can't afford to have very much in stocks either, because they need to spend the money too soon. Hopefully they have a paid for house that they can fall back on. All of the idea about how much money you have in stocks should be driven by how much income you need to draw, how much distribution you need to draw from your portfolio, and let that dictate how much you can afford to put in stocks.
So you're saying you kind of work it backwards. You start with that and you say, okay, here's what we really need. So now we back up, we say, taking that number, let's reverse math this into see how much we can actually afford to put
at risk.
Right.
And so now you have to identify how much risk are you willing to take. And that's where when we look at time horizons, earlier in the show we were talking about a 15-year time horizon for safe or safer type monies, lower volatility monies. Maybe you can't afford to be that conservative and you only go to a 10-year time horizon or something of that nature, because it's just the way life works. You unfortunately didn't save enough and you haven't been able to reduce your expenses enough to retire.
Now, along those same lines, okay, you got a certain amount in stocks. We talked about safety, as you just said. You know, 15 years of safety.
Or lower volatility.
Lower volatility, but enough where you can have some guaranteed income for 15 years. Now, you know, we don't advocate any kind of market timing, but you know, you can look around and you can see when valuations in the stock market are typically high or when they're lower than normal. You know, if you look at some of these
I think it's easier to do when it's lower than normal than high, because there were a lot of people saying, look at the valuations of these stocks. It's ridiculous. It's going to crash. And it was 2012 when they were making those statements.
Well,
it didn't happen in 13. It didn't happen in 14.
Yeah. They're saying that now. You could look at 2008, the end, early 2009, and sort of say, well, valuations are so.
Right. So on the downside, when the market's down 40%, you have a much better idea that, well, we're getting closer to the bottom.
You do. So at that point, do you ever say, you know, maybe 15 years is too much? Maybe we can back off on the, safety time horizon. You know, maybe not do quite so much, because since valuations are low at this point, maybe we can afford to put a little bit more, quote unquote, at risk in stocks to take advantage of what could very well be cyclically, historically, a run up in the stock market.
From a planning perspective, we don't start with that. We still start with the time horizon that,
Sure, of course. But once you get to
that point, discussion with the individual, or the discussion has the individual with their strategist, their planner, about, you know, maybe I don't need 15 years because of the down. Maybe I want to, but it is a more aggressive situation. And a lot of people, especially in the early parts of retirement, don't want to be aggressive. So this is all about you, your plan, but you have to start somewhere. And just starting with a 60-40 allocation, or 100 minus your age, and that's what you put in stocks, that is not an appropriate allocation for you. Now, it may come out to be the fact that at 65, you end up, through the math that you go back and do, that you have 35% in stocks. But that's because it was tailored around your income, not your age. Because it's all about what you're trying to accomplish. And not every 65-year-old has the same income requirement from their portfolio. Not every 65-year-old has the same temperament towards risk. And so they all have different ideas about what their portfolio should look like. And so that's where, don't just take some rule of thumb that has nothing to do with you.
Well, no rule of thumb has anything to do with you. It's generic, and it doesn't work. Not every 65-year-old has exactly the same situation. Okay, thanks, Professor Plum. I want to get to a couple of emails here. Gene in Escondido, California. Very simple question. Should one do a stretch IRA on their regular IRA and Roths?
Well, all you have to do is name a beneficiary. Now you've got a stretch IRA. There is no such thing as a specific type of an account, IRA account, that you have to do to set up a stretch IRA. Any IRA that has a named beneficiary is a stretch IRA. Every IRA that has a named beneficiary or multiple named beneficiaries is a stretch IRA. It isn't an account, it's just the law.
Yeah, explain what they mean when they say stretch.
Well, let's go back in history, back 15 years ago or more, back into the 90s. Back then, we had a specific set of rules we had to deal with. And when a person turned 70 and a half, they had to make a decision on their IRA. They had to make a decision of how they were going to calculate their required minimum distribution. And whether they were married or single had an impact on it. And whether they used something called a recalculation method or a declining balance method had a lot to do with their required minimum distribution. Not every 75-year-old, that a single person, had the same required minimum distribution back then. Depending on what method they chose, it would either basically stop when they did and have to all come out, no stretch, or they could name the beneficiary and base it on a joint life expectancy. They had to make these the decisions ahead of time. And then they had to live with those, and unfortunately, their heirs had to live with those decisions. But the IRS realized that nobody knew what decision Grandpa had made, so we did. So they simplified all the rules. And they made every IRA a stretch IRA. The only thing you have to do is name individuals as beneficiaries, and it can be stretched over their life expectancy. There's now, nothing special about it.
Under current law, because there are some legislation proposed that would get
everything
rid of these
we talk
stretch
about,
IRA provision.
Every single thing we talk about, we could say under current law, because they could change anything.
Well, but this
but
really
they're talking
has.
About changing
really
stretch
has.
IRAs.
Where they're talking about beneficiaries, non-spouse beneficiaries, having to take the money within 5 years.
And nothing we do today naming stretch IRAs is going to change. If they change it, they'll change it on everybody.
That's it. Okay. Trivia and more of your emails and phone calls when we come back. 877-PLANNER. PLANNER is our number, PLANNER. Johnny Dean, Professor Rick Plum, we're here not that much longer, in fact, for this hour. So if you want to get your calls in, I would suggest you do it right now. We have a little bit of room on the phones, and we'll get some emails in just a couple of moments. That is a moment or two, and whatever else we have time for. Trivia coming up as well. I want to remind you that coming up tomorrow on this program, we're going to be talking about a capital gains tax strategy. A capital gains tax. Well, oddly enough, for those that don't know, capital gains taxes happen to be at a different rate. In fact, currently at a lower rate than ordinary income taxes. They're all at a lower rate now, aren't they, Professor Plum? I mean, if you have an ordinary income tax rate, your capital gains tax rate is
lower,
right?
Long-term capital gains.
Well, this is true. We should say that. Short-term capital gains are still taxed at the same rate as ordinary income.
Yep.
But long-term capital gains, which is defined as an asset that you've held for at least a year or more,
and qualified dividends.
Correct, yeah. Well, qualified dividends, that's ordinary income, you're
saying.
No,
qualified dividends are taxed at a lower, the same tax.
Oh, I thought you were saying that it was...
Qualified dividends have the same as long-term capital gains.
Yeah.
And they have preferential tax treatment.
Right. So if you have capital assets, assets that could be taxed at the capital gains rate, there are ways you can set up your portfolio to take advantage of that. Because we know that we were saying earlier that if you take capital assets and you put them inside your IRA, well, capital asset or not, Professor Plum, when that comes out of there, it's going to be painted with
will be painted with the ordinary income brush.
Exactly. In fact, as soon as it comes out, the gets sprayed with green paint or whatever color you want. Because I don't know why I said that, but it's all the same color.
Green is good. I'd say red.
Okay, red paint. Exactly, because that's indicative of something bad, which is ordinary income tax rate. Now, that's not to say that all assets, they should never put anything inside of a traditional IRA. There are reasons to do that.
And there's different times of life where you do one thing versus another
right.
for that tax treatment.
Exactly. So that's why we're talking about different capital gains tax strategies. That's coming up tomorrow. And if tomorrow's discussion is as good as the one right now, we're going to have a gangbuster show. I mean, that really defined it right there. All right.
But it is also... difficult to understand how that tax rate is applied. We'll talk about that.
Yeah, we will. Are we going to stack? Well, before you used...
Well, we're talking about brackets, and we're talking about a stack of $1 bills.
But they have to have different colors. You also used a milk jug.
Well, just bottles of water or jugs
whatever
of water.
Whatever it was, yeah.
Fluid, different colored fluids to denote it, yeah.
Well, I don't know, but okay. A loaf of bread, a jug of wine, and thou. We'll be using that. Okay, let's see, trivia for today. This comes directly from, I mean, delivered to us from one of their, I don't know, bicycle messengers from the National Bureau of Economic Research. They couldn't wait to get this one on. The U.S. economy has been expanding since July 2009. And the expansion reached 78 months in length as of the end of 2015. A duration exceeded by just four other U.S. expansions since 1854. Or if you want to do the math, that's 162 years ago.
Yeah, but it's been expanding at such an anemic rate.
Well, it's hard to call it a. It's hard to call it a.
I mean, usually when it expands for a long period of time, we get way overvalued. We get way high on the side of, and it has to correct. But this one doesn't necessarily. I don't know. Doesn't have to have a correction because the expansion, it's probably expanded less over that period of time. Those now 81 months. Than it did over a four-year period of time many other times.
Yeah, this is the weirdest one I've ever experienced, and maybe people are just getting used to.
Even worse than the 1854 one.
Well, the 1854 one wasn't great, if you recall. I mean, we were just kids.
Yeah,
we were really young back then. But you know, I remember our family was affected greatly by that. All right, so there you go. There's your trivia for today. Okay, if you want to email us, you can go to wealthed.com, our website, wealthed.com, as did Robert in Brooklyn, New York. Now, okay, let's see if I think I know what he means. I think he made a mistake. Robert says, I turned 62 on August 8th, 1953.
Wow.
And my wife on September 10th, 1953.
He's old.
Well, I know. No, he's not. I doubt he and his wife are in their mid-120s. I think what he means is he turned 62 last August, and his wife turned 62 last September. That's what it was. Okay. So they're both 62 at the end of the year. She began collecting her Social Security, which is $1,328 a month. My Social Security would be $1,400. However, I decided to wait to receive it at age 66 or maybe age 70. Would I be entitled to any spousal benefit while waiting?
Well, not quite yet, but soon you may be able to have a spousal benefit. If you are going to apply today or in the next couple of years, you would have to apply for your own benefit first. And since your benefit's larger than hers, you would only get your benefit. But if you wait until your full retirement age, age 66, because you had the foresight to be born before the end, before 1954, you were 62 before the end of last year, you still can do a restricted application once you get to full retirement age. So when you get to full retirement age, you can choose to take only a spousal retirement benefit from your wife's work record and let your benefit grow all the way until age 70. Now, this could work very nicely in your favor if either one of you live into your late 70s. Because you will be able to receive the spousal benefit for 4 years. It's not going cold turkey all the way to age 70. So your break even is not all the way out into the early to mid 80s. Your break even age is in somewhere in the late 70s. And it makes some sense. Now, if you tell me neither one of you are going to live that long, then go ahead and take your benefit now. But what you can do is at 66, apply for a spousal retirement benefit. And you will be eligible for up to 50% of her Social Security benefit. Not the benefits she's receiving today. She's receiving a reduced benefit. You would be eligible for 50% of her full retirement age benefit. So the benefit that you would be able to get is almost $900 a month, not including any cost of living adjustments. So she's going to get her $1,300 and change. You're going to get close to $900 while you wait for your benefit to continue to grow. And if your benefit's $1,400 at 62, mm-hmm. it'll be close to $2,600 by the time you get to 70.
Exactly. You and your wife just got in under the wire, which is kind of a nice thing. So check and see what it is when you're full retirement age. We're out of time for this hour. If you need the Brain Trust off the air, you can certainly contact Professor Plum or any of the advisors at Lucia Capital Group. Their off-air number, 800-644-1150. 800-644-1150. Give them a call. That's all the time we have for Professor Plum. I'm Johnny Dean. This is Bucket Strategy Investing.
Information presented should not be considered specific tax, legal, or investment advice. You should always seek counsel of the appropriate advisor prior to making any investment decision. All investments are subject to risk, including the loss of principal. There is no guarantee that any investing or financial planning strategy will be profitable, provide protection from loss, or meet its stated objectives. Investment advisor representatives of Lucia Capital Group are also registered representatives of and offer securities through Lucia Securities LLC, a registered broker-dealer member FINRA SIPC. John Dean is an associated person with Lucia Securities LLC. In the information presented, the opinions and views expressed are subject to change without notice and may not come to pass. Registration with the SEC does not imply a certain level of skill or training.